I'm looking at a picture here of Donegal footballer Finbar Rorty, and he's getting a double arm workout. He's got a lot of stuff in his hands after the weekend. Brendan Devaney, a great weekend for him, and I suppose four all-stars for Donegal in total.
These are important,
aren't they? Players want these.
They do, of course, yeah. I mean, it's a serious accolade. I suppose it's something that just stands you apart. Listen, people are saying you're the best in the country in your position, so... It's one thing to make the starting 15 for your county, but you're basically the starting 15 for the country then. So it's a nice accolade, well deserved. And as you say, of all them, Finbar, like picking up both awards, you know, picking up an All-Star and a young player. I mean, what a season he's had. And I'm delighted to say he's going to be on the show this evening.
And it is a packed show. John Gilday, Pádraig Hilferty, and New Fermanagh manager Declan Boner as well. A lot to get through on the programme, no doubt.
Huge. I mean, I suppose disappointing note with Finbar, he obviously was playing for Niamh Connell yesterday's defeat to Scotstown in Ulster Club Championship. But Declan Boner, of course, in charge of Éireann Gaels, they won back-to-back Fermanagh Championships.
No, he's not the actual Fermanagh county manager.
He's taken that job when he's finished. So he's only recently been taken. You know, he'll leave Éireann Gaels when the season's over.
I'm bluffing, but if I don't know, I don't
know. You're okay. But they actually beat Kingscourt at the weekend, which was... They were massive underdogs.
Yeah.
I mean, they were well beaten by Scotstown last year, the same team that beat Niamh Connell. You know, it was a tough opposition for them. And of course, the Fermanagh team got into it, usually are underdogs, but they beat Kingscourt after half time. So Declan Boner's season keeps going with Éireann Gaels for now in the an Ulster semi final. But of course, as I say, he is now the new manager of Fermanagh. And what a time he's had in coaching. I mean, he's had some service between playing and coaching clubs, counties. You know, he's two spells.
It's an amazing CV.
He's won stuff everywhere. Yeah, and listen, as I say, when I see him come up for the Fermanagh job, I just smiled to myself, because maybe he thought after Donegal that time, you know, where is he going to go? Next thing he goes in the Éireann Gaels, and I was like, Éireann Gaels, okay, right.
You're edging closer. Huh?
Well, they hadn't won a championship in a long time, Greg, and next thing they won back-to-back with him there. So, yeah, huge for him, and well done to him. And listen, obviously Fermanagh last year, you know, they competed well way down in Ulster, and Down went on. They have a great season. They were in the semi-final of the Tailteann. So, listen, he has good players to work with there. Paul Brennan, ex-county players, and coaching with him. Emma Mulligan used to play with Leitrim's, joined him as well. So,
and there's inevitably going to be a sexy head-to-head in the not-too-distant future, isn't there?
There has to be, doesn't
it? You know what I mean? It always is thrown up. Niamh Connell fell short, disappointment, but it was it's a significant stage of the competition to get to. Glencolum Kill were also in action.
Yeah, Glencolum Kill, big defeat. The three Donegal teams were beat, like, you know, by the Monaghan sides. And funny, a guy stopped me there yesterday and said, you know, Does that mean something? Well, I was kind of, you know, it's hard to evaluate because it's not the same teams playing each other all the time. Now, it does look bad if we lose the three games, but you'd have to look at each team's individual. And probably Kieran Donagh was the one, you know, and that was an Emmyville side who probably shouldn't be in junior football. They were a class apart there. So they were the team that probably were the closest to Niamh Connell. Niamh Connell very well beat by Carrick McCross, you know, unfortunately for them. And I say Niamh Connell were just in a spell in the first half. I think it made about 12 minutes, Greg. They conceded 2-5 or 2-6. I must look back at my notes to no score. Mm. And, you know, they never give up. They kept battling second half, Greg, but they just couldn't get the scores. They needed more. They needed a couple of goals, which was, I suppose, the difference.
Shane Malone had
a couple of brilliant two-pointers, you know, Owen McGettigan and that, but the spread of scores and the different people that they normally get just didn't seem to happen. Scotstown just looked a bit of a level ahead on the day, Greg, you know.
Yeah, a bit of hurling as well too, Bert.
Yeah, the Bert men, they're flying the flag, Greg, surely, yeah. Flying the flag well in the junior championship. Yeah, they're into the final now. They had a one over Con McGee, so 115-109. So still keeping the flag flying there, the Bert men.
And your club was involved against McCool's too in an under-21 decider.
That's right.
So, yeah, they come through that.
Aye, and you know, Greg, the under-21s now, like, it's played obviously in a group phase coming in now to the finals of that as well. So listen, still silverware to be handed out. You wonder does the season never end for a lot of people, you know.
Yeah.
So yeah, listen, a lot of stuff happening.
So Luke Barrett's on the show as well.
Luke Barrett's on.
What road are you going down,
you know,
with Luke?
Luke was obviously in my Donegal last 2 years. You know, he's been a former County underage manager. He's done a lot of coaching everywhere. He's involved with Lochmaggrory, who as well were playing at the weekend. They lost to Kilcoo in the Ulster Championship there. And, you know, I suppose the strains that he's left Donegal, there's rumours about, obviously, Derry are after him and they want him in that. So it'll be a bit of a tough role to fill, because I know from talking to him, you know, he is very deep. He's very tactical. He's a real forward-thinking coach as well. So I suppose that's someone, there's rumours out there, different people. So I think Jim will have to bring in someone to kind of cover him now, whether he goes to Derry or not. My feeling is he will be going to Derry because of the Mina connection there. That's what I'd be feeling, and a bit of a loss for Donegal now. But listen, be good to get his views, because Lochmaggrory, no more than Declan Bonner's side, you know, had this massive break in championship ones. They had been in the junior championship, I think, about 11 years ago. So they're a phenomenal story.
Not
you know?
A bad wee show for mid November.
No,
bad,
you know
not a bad small show deep in, into Greg, November. Right? I'll tell you one thing.
We're going to pack it all in. Yeah, listen, we might round it up next week.
Do you think?
Season 5. We might
just. You're getting very lazy, aren't you?
Am I?
Yeah, do some human interest interviews now. Come on, you lazy bugger.
Listen, I could. You're right. I shouldn't have said that. I take it back.
I'm here. I'm half dying. Do you think? Because I'm really quite sick at the moment, and you're a man, and I'm a man, right? And we have to be very brave, right? So we can't. We don't let on how sick we are. I mean, any woman listening knows that, or a fella, if you're with a fella. Do you think? One second, Caroline. Now I'm not finished speaking. I have a very genuine
Caroline's
question
for Brendan.
Caroline's
got a limb
up
for you there.
She doesn't. This is part of the point. Do you think women don't really understand how sick we get? You know what I mean? And how brave we are, and don't give us the care, love and attention that we deserve.
See, to gender that's you're really looking for trouble. I've got to get myself involved. I think that the person depends on the person. I've met some tough ladies out there, the tough.
I'm afraid I've met some
men that are a wee bit wishy-washy, so I think it depends on the person.
The only medicine I've been offered so far are man-up pills.
Man-up? What are they?
You just take a pill and you man up a little bit and stop crying.
Yeah. Well, listen, depends on the dose. We've always got this confliction. Is it a flu or is it a cold? If it's a cold, you need to man up. Now, a flu can hit hard. So I'm presuming you've
a cold. Yeah, but one man's cold's another man's flu. Anyway, come here. 7 o'clock tonight. John Gilday, Pádraig Hilferty, who was with Brendan, of course, at the weekend. There is Luke Barrett in there, Declan Bonner in there as well. It is a cracking. Roisin McGeever has just messaged me to say, men are bad patients. I'll give you some of my man up pills.
Good, Roisin.
Anyway, that's not very nice. Yeah, thanks, Roisin. Yeah. That's the type of sympathy I'm talking about, you know. Me battling through. Yes. Hey, Brendan, listen, brilliant stuff.
Greg, thanks a million.
As I say, it's great. It's a great situation with sport. You can have such a packed show mid-November, isn't it, in Donegal? Yeah, brilliant stuff. Thanks for calling in, by the way. Good to see you. Sure. Enjoy your throat infection in about 3 days. I'm joined in studio by Irish champion jockey Dylan Brian McMonagle. Dylan, thanks so much for calling in.
Not at all. It's good to be here.
What a season you've had.
It's been unbelievable. It's been a roller coaster.
Is it a pinch yourself situation that you've had all these experiences travelling all over the place?
It's hard to believe. We had a great year last year. Every year you set off, you want to do a little bit better and just keep on improving. But from the start, it's been a roller coaster and it's only got better.
Is it? But now, I'm coming from this from a position of not a great deal of knowledge, right? So I'm not going to pretend to have it, but just curious, like, do you get better rides the more you win? So is it almost like a chicken and egg situation, right? So you'll get good results with certain horses, then you'll catch the eye of trainers or owners or what have you, or maybe you're locked in, and then you start getting better rides, and then that adds to the success year on year. Is that how it works?
Yeah, very much so. You set off in your own stable. I'm based with Joseph O'Brien. He's got over 200 horses there, so I ride the majority of them when they run, but the more winners you have for him and the bigger winners you have, it opens up more doors for the outside world as well, and even internationally, which led to having the Breeders' Cup winner, even with Willie Mullins last weekend.
How does I'm not looking for any private information, right? But how does getting that ride go? How far in advance and that type of stuff?
Every jockey has an agent which tries to get them outside rides and is always doing their best to get John horses outside of your own stable whenever you're not riding in those races. So he would have put forward my name to all different trainers when I was going over there to say that I was available. So I was lucky enough that Willie came back and said that I could ride the horse. I went to the car and rode him work the week before I went, and that's where it all started. And it wasn't really expected, but it was super the way it worked out.
It's astonishing, really, because it's a really prestigious race, that, isn't it?
Yeah, it's huge. It's the very last big meeting of the year. All internationals meet at the one stage, and it's the best against the best. So to be riding there is special.
But well, $5 million, what's your cunt? No, I'm only joking. So come here. See your skill set that you have as jockey. All jockeys are individual. Do you need to be matched with horses with certain personalities? You know, ones that are easy distracted, ones that, you know, go off at a blast or what have you. Do you know what I mean? Is it done like that, where you're matched to certain horses' personalities, if I can put it like that?
Yeah, it would be. You have to kind of adapt to all the different types there is. So you need to be able to get horses to relax. And if they're lazy, you have to be able to wake them up as well. But that's what the good jockeys can do. They can ride any type and get the best out of every one of them. So that's the main one. Figuring out what the little problems is or the little issues that they have that you can make better is what makes the difference, maybe.
And a good ride for you is doing the right thing at the right time with the, you know, depending on which horse you're on, you know, so that you're it kicks on when you want it to kick on. That type of stuff. You're thinking about that as you're going in the saddle almost.
Yeah, it's all about instinct. You get instructions off the trainers and you go through the plans and what you might do here and there, but you have to be able to go from A to B to C, and you go right down the alphabet of stages, and it might look very good at any stage, but you have to try and make the decisions to get yourself in the right spot and you know what's going to happen. But that's what all the farm is there for. You have to go through it all, know who to be following, what horses is going to be good that you need to beat. Just reading the plan, it's like reading a book. If it all planned out and you know everything else, it'll all fall into place.
And I presume that starts, you know, in the traps, effectively, in the, what are they called again?
The stalls,
yeah. So if you get an outside stall, but your horse likes to run on the rail, for instance, do you have to factor that in?
Yeah, it is very hard to do, though, but not everything is possible, and we're not robots then.
No, of course not. That's why you don't win every race, right?
Exactly. You can only try your best, but trying your best and doing little things different sometimes makes the difference.
Like, because the reason I'm asking these questions is for a lot of people that maybe, you know, it's the Grand National or some of the other bigger events, don't realise necessarily that you're not just holding on for dear life here, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
That you're working with these animals to get them over the line first. How did you get involved in, I suppose, firstly getting up on the back of a horse, but then realising that, you know, that there was something there for you that could end up being a profession?
Yeah, well, it takes a long period of time to get to where you probably need to be to figure out if you're going to be good enough or not. But from I was very, very young, I was on the back of one, and I was lucky enough my family always had horses. Yeah. And I did plenty of pony racing, and I was very lucky that we always had good horses to ride when I was pony racing, and I got on a lot of good horses whenever I was going anywhere, no matter if it was Dingle or it was Cork or anywhere around the country. I always was able to get on good ones, which was a big help. And when you're riding with confidence and you're on the best horse and you don't make too many mistakes, they usually win. So I was lucky enough that I was getting on good horses when I was pony racing, and that built up the confidence. And when you're winning, you're improving, and that's what it's all about.
And I suppose, you know, too, it's a big industry, but it's a small industry. You know, there are those in the know. You'd be start catching the rye, effectively, because they're always looking for the next.
You'd spot someone good out a mile away, and you just know when someone's very natural, you'd spot them out. But there is others as well, mightn't be as gifted, but their hard work gets them up to that stage as well. But it's just if you want to do it or not, that makes a difference.
Do you have to train? Because physically here, you know, you have to be incredibly fit. Does that come through sort of the practicing, the training, the riding them, you know, sort of not on the track, so to speak, and then racing? Or do you have to do other stuff to stay in shape?
It depends on what time of the year it is. When you're in full season, you're riding every single day, you're fit as a flea, you don't have to be doing
You're match ready all the time.
You're always fit. But, for example, if you have 6 weeks holidays and then you're starting back, you do need
too
to
too stoned
do,
to shift.
You need to do something to get the belly off and
so when
and
is
be
your
fit.
Downtime? When is the
No
break?
Really. So the season finished up there obviously last week. So I'm going to Bahrain next Wednesday and I'm going to Hong Kong on the 10th of December maybe. So they're just two meetings that I have between now and Christmas. And
but it's such
I've
a global industry and there's racing happening all of the time. Theoretically, you do have to allow yourself some space in the calendar.
You do have to give yourself a break because you can't keep going forever. And as you said, it's not easy on the body as well as anything else. And cutting weight every day and all that, it drains you. So you do need to refuel.
That's an interesting thing too as well because people will talk about, you know, handicap races and the handicap is effectively your weight and any additional weight and the horse's form and all that type of stuff. There's a lot in there. So, like, do you have a set weight that is your weight that you have to sort of almost always be at, or is there a particular rise that you need to get rid of another quarter of a stone or something?
Yeah, well, I would usually be around 9 stone, which is perfect for Ireland because there isn't a whole lot of weights under 9 stone unless you do go into the handicaps. Or else it's age allowance or whatever in stakes races, but I do have to get down to 8.11, 8.12, 8.10 sometimes. I had to get down to below 8.10 in America, which is a bit lighter than usual, but for the big meetings and the big races, that's when you have to just push a little bit extra. But we're lucky enough in Ireland, the weights is nice, and everyone is getting bigger nowadays, so the little allowances we get and all is a big help.
It's all flat for you, is it?
All flat.
Will you ever do hurdles?
I hope not.
you're not fully mad?
No, that's a good way of describing it, I think. We've got a little bit of sense. Unless I get too heavy or something, that would be the only reason, really.
But does there be pressure on you to consider going over the jumps?
No.
It's just yours, it disciplines the flats and people
accept
that.
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
Right, so you had a great season last year, as you mentioned. This year, 95 winners last time I checked. You're the champion jockey, right? How does your career progress? Do you know what I mean? So what comes next for you if you want to say, right, I'm kicking on now?
You just have to keep getting better.
Yeah.
Keep on improving, keep the numbers coming up, keep the percentages getting up. Getting more outside rides, going more internationally. There's so much more. There's so many races around the world that you want to win. And I've been champion jockey now, but like just being that, you can't really accept just being champion jockey. You want to be the best there was. And you want to be a Ryan or a Frankie Dettori, Lester Piggott, Mick Cannon. That's the kind of name you want to get to. And
does that mean spending more time in England?
Not so much England, but everywhere else around the world. You have to travel to get the results and get the experience and be able to adapt to those places when you go there and be as good as you would be around Ballinrobe or Roscommon or wherever it may be around the country tracks here. But it's very important just to keep getting better every day, know what you're doing right and wrong and keep on improving. And once you keep on improving, hopefully things will just keep getting better.
Did you ever work out, if I put a fiver on every race you were in, right, would I be up or down?
I don't know. It would probably depend on the prices. I'd say it'd probably be down. You definitely lose more than you win, that's for sure.
Okay, but then when you hear some trebles and all this kind of stuff, you think, if only you knew. But I mean, even you don't know on the day. It's just down to...
It's not easy.
Do you get a sense of the form of a horse when you get on it? Because it's like anything. You could have an off day, could have gone a bit nuts in the yard and it's just not settled. Do you get a good sense of the horse when you hop on it, how the day's going to go?
Yeah, you would 100%. Straight away, you'd know what they're feeling. There could be people down there in the bookies and they could have backed you and it could be an odds-on favourite, but it could have got upset in the stalls, for example, and its heart rate would have went through the roof. And when that happens, it's like doing a 400-metre sprint before a 5K. You'd die after going a kilometre, and that's the difference where people don't see those small little things, or it could have got a fright in the paddock and got upset and got a bit overheated, or you never know what could happen. There's so much things. They're only animals at the end of the day. But
could have had a bad curry the night before.
You never know. Come here. A lot can happen. You just have to try and iron the problems out.
Are you very competitive generally?
I would be.
Yeah.
I was only laughing there a couple of weeks ago, my friends. They all play golf and whatever else, and I'm absolutely terrible at golf.
It's a great level up, brings you down to earth, doesn't it?
I would love to go out and play golf, but I couldn't accept the fact of getting beat every day. So I'm going to have to get a little bit better at it before I can compete with him. But the likes of that, I wouldn't go and play golf because I know I'm going to lose.
Do you set specific goals? So is it a case of next season bettering this season? Or do you have, you know, is there a particular ride that you haven't had yet that you would love to be involved in, a particular country you haven't gone to? I don't know if you've been out in Dubai, for example. I mean, that the World Cup out there is massive. I don't know if you've done that yet or whatever. Yeah. But do you set yourself season goals?
Yeah, I was in Dubai last year. I've been to Australia, America. I've been to plenty of different places, Qatar, Saudi. I haven't been to Hong Kong, which I'm going to this year.
Right, that's another
tick. I'm going for 3 months in January, so that's going to be an experience. I'd love to do Japan as well. There's still so many places and so many big races I'd like to ride in, but hopefully the future is good and the horses keep on coming, and I'm very lucky I'm in a good spot with Joseph, and he's very supportive of me, so a big thanks.
Are all trainers like that, or horse owners? Because it'd be very easy to sort of say, you know, we've given you the opportunities, you're ours, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. We've arrived that day, but now you're heading off with Mullins or whatever it might be. Is there a bit, you know, are you lucky in the relationship you have with the stable you're with?
I am very lucky. Thankfully that the horses we have is able to compete at the top level as well as the lower level as well, but I have to ride for Joseph whenever he wants me, and that's the way it is.
So he gets first dibs on you?
100%.
Yeah.
And then if I'm not riding for him, I can opt to stepping outside the circle and getting spare rides for the likes of Willie or whoever it may be.
Mm.
But I'm very lucky that I do get loads of support outside the yard as well as inside. So that's very important as well, because there's no point in sitting in the way or watching what's happening if you're not there, because you need to be riding in every race to be winning.
You know, theoretically, a lot of the times you could be riding in Ireland on heavy ground or in Britain for that matter, and then you might head to other countries and it's not. So does the ground matter to you in terms of enjoying the ride?
No.
You don't have a particular...
No, it doesn't really matter. The biggest matter is if the horse is going to handle it or not.
Yeah, and how it performs in those conditions.
Yeah, some do and some don't.
Mm.
Some mightn't try 100%, and if it's slow ground, they mightn't give you everything. They might give up a little bit earlier on you, and there's loads of different things. Even if a horse wants soft ground and runs in quick ground, it mightn't let itself down to give 100% either. But that's the beauty about it. There's so many different ways around it, and
so I presume even you would even take into account then on certain days the soft spots of a track.
Yeah, it's important to know what the best of it is. There's plenty of tracks that is a little bit better here and a little bit better there, but watching racing and figuring it all out with experience, that all comes to you, and walking the track as well before racing is a big help as well, to know the smallest little advantage could get you a winner, which is what matters.
What did it feel like crossing the line first on Ethical Diamond? Has that been the professional peak so far, and just trying to get a sense of what it feels like inside?
It would be. It took 10 seconds to sink in what even happened, because at one stage I was last, and within a furlong I was 3 lengths clear going away from the field. Nothing was going to beat me.
Yeah.
When I crossed the line, it was very hard to believe that actually did happen. It sunk in fairly quick what did actually happen when you get interviewed and all after, and you get the flowers thrown over you. It's unbelievable. It's what dreams are made of.
I was chatting to another professional sports person. No, actually, this isn't a chat. This is an interview I actually heard, whereby, you know, you spend your whole career dreaming of moments like that, but the actual euphoria you get from it doesn't really last that long.
No.
And you sort of have to go, okay, well, I've done that. I can't live off that. Now I have to get that buzz somewhere else again. Yeah. I have to get that buzz again.
Yeah, it's a lot of work for a very short period of time, as you said, and it's only 2 minutes or 3 minutes of work that actually matters. A lot of hours do go into the small stage. That's why you have to be on the ball and try and make the most of it when you do. But once it's over, you get a buzz, you get the kick, but then it's on to the next one, and it's all about the next one, because no one's going to really remember what's happening behind you. It's all about what's happening next.
There's a lot of travel, and it seems like it's every person's dream. It's every, a particularly young person's dream. But I mean, you must be in hotels a lot of the time. You talked about your mates playing golf, and whether you want to play with them or not, right? But it's those moments that maybe you don't get as much as other people who don't have the career that you have. At this stage of your career, do you love it all, or do you know, is all the travel and maybe the overnight stays in hotels a bit of a pain?
I wouldn't say it's a bit of a pain. If you were sitting at home and you weren't going to those places, you'd be crying that you're not riding. So that's part and parcel. You go, you have to go wherever it is. You put in the graft. The social life, there is none really. When you're racing every day, all day, 7 days a week, and that's what matters. You have to put in the effort to get it out. But if you're sitting at home on the couch and you're watching the racing, that means you're not doing very well. So being out there on track is where you want to be. But it is. It's tough work. There's long hours, but the rewards are good when it happens.
So what do you do to wind down for fun or what?
Chill out.
Just chill.
Chill out.
Yeah.
Just spend time at home with family and go around visiting everyone. And I'm going to go to Dubai next week or the week after for 10 days holidays and get a bit of sun and just zone out from it all and refuel.
Fantastic.
Sleep plenty as well.
Yeah, but you've earned it all. But of course, too, don't overdo the pastries.
Yes.
That's the critical thing, right?
It's a bit harder to come off than it is to put it on.
Because what age are you now?
22.
22, so you've still got your burning level's still quite high. Like I'm at the age where mine's just gone now. Like I can't turn around. You know, it just stays there, right?
Yeah.
So it'll get tougher as you go on. It's remarkable what you're doing, and it's been amazing listening to Oisin on the sports bulletins. You know, and when your name first started popping up, it was a little winner here or there, and then next thing you know, it's the next leagues up, and right now it's just the top big leagues. It's a remarkable achievement for everyone. But for you to be doing it on behalf of Letterkenny, yourself, your family and your friends in Letterkenny and Donegal, it really is, you're really on track to become one of our best exports, no doubt about it.
Hopefully. It's a big thanks to everyone who's got me there. It's a small little part in the world up here, but they're definitely a supportive one, and a massive thanks to everyone who's got me here, but it wouldn't be possible without all the support, and they know who they are.
Did you ever do the Ballantrae races?
I did. That was one of my first winners, actually, in the horse grade before I went
to
Dingle and won the Derby.
I lost 250 each way on the horse that came second. Did you? I don't know.
I think it was only a two-horse race, so you didn't pick too well, did you?
Yeah, but I didn't have my predictors on. Listen, thanks so much for calling up. We've been waiting get a chat to you, but I mean, obviously you're flat out. And it's great that you've got this little trip to Dubai to look forward to and all that kind of stuff. And what a position to be looking forward to the next season in earnest. I know, as you say, you're going to Hong Kong and all that kind of stuff, but, you know, you're in a cracking position, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm very privileged to be in the spot I'm in. Hopefully Hong Kong goes good and I can take plenty of positives away from it and come back better and stronger. And once that's finished, we'll be straight into the flat season again here and it'll be all go again.
Do you ever consider doing a season on the other side of the world, obviously? Oh, how does that work?
When I'm tied with Joseph, you have to be here for the summer months. I do go away in the winter time.
Yeah.
The last two or three years, I've been to Australia for a few months. I spent a couple of months in Dubai last year.
So you've been there, done that.
It's all just about improving and getting more contacts and learning as much as you can and getting to know new people and being able to go to those places whenever a big race comes up and being able to know what's happening. It's good.
Brilliant stuff. Dylan Brown McMonagall, continued success. Congratulations on everything you've achieved. And thanks so much for coming in for a chat.
Thank you very much.
Now, you may have heard that Minister for Agriculture, Food and the Marine, Martin Hayden, announced the introduction of a compulsory housing order for poultry and captive birds to protect them from the risk of avian influenza. The new rules will come into effect on Monday, the 10th of November, which, of course, is today. Mark McHugh is owner of Glenbarren Farm Produce. It's a free-range egg-producing farm outside of Donegal Town. And I think, Mark, thank you very much for joining us. I think it's interesting for us to understand, those not in the industry, that it is not just turkey farmers that this might affect.
That's correct. It's all poultry, Greg.
And what are the implications for you in relation to this, Mark? Or maybe it's something that's quite manageable for you?
Well, it gives every poultry farmer within Ireland great anxiety. I mean, if any of your sheds go down, the whole farm goes down with
wow.
it. Like,
okay.
It's a very serious situation, and it takes so little to infect a shed. Maybe it's something small as a pinhead of bird feces that might be infected. If it gets in, the whole flock goes down.
So that could be simply an infected wild bird flying over your facility, you know, excretes.
Yeah.
And just like that, you could see your entire flock gone.
Yes, 100%, yeah. It could be walked in on your boot.
Yeah.
It could be transmitted via the air. It could come in through an air vent. Wild bird feces could get on the roof. And the water could maybe wash it in somehow into the shed.
Mm.
There's so many ways you could get infected.
Now, it comes into the public mind every now and again, you know, when there are outbreaks. But, Mark, I would imagine people in the industry are ever cautious of this, constantly thinking, hopefully it doesn't happen.
That's correct, yeah.
And is it the right move if, you know, one bird in one shed's affected that the whole flock should go? Is that proportionate? Like, is there any concern within the industry that that might be just too big a reaction, or do you understand that that's what must be done?
No, well, I would understand. I mean, the department has regulations in for a reason, like, and, you know, if a shed goes down, it's better off that the full shed is slaughtered because it's so contagious.
Mm. All right, but thankfully your flock is safe and sound under this housing order now. In terms of the time of year, Mark, is this a busier time, just more generally in the industry? It's not often I get to speak to a free-range egg producer. Is this a busy time of the year, or is it busy all year round, or what's the story?
It's generally busy all year round. There's a lot of work comes with poultry farming, and especially egg production. It's a 7-day-a-week job, 365 days a year. It's a very busy time in general. We put a lot of effort into it to make sure the eggs are produced and produced correctly and adhere to all the guidelines that's in place. Like,
yeah. Where do we see your eggs? Like, do you...
You see my eggs in the Lidl supermarkets.
Brilliant.
Apart from that, I generally only wholesale throughout Ireland, but mostly all Lidl supermarkets will have my eggs as well.
All right, okay. Brilliant stuff. All right, Mark, listen, great to hear you being so successful. It's great to get an insight, actually, so we understand, you know, not only is it a 365 pressure job, but when you've got this concern of something that could be ended up on your lap, you know, through no fault of your own too, it's no harmless understanding that it's not all shiny. There's no point me asking you, by the way, before I let you go, which came first, the chicken or the egg? I mean, as a poultry farmer, do you have an answer to that one for me whilst I have you?
As far as I know, it's the chicken, but I'll leave that to the experts.
Mark, good man. Thanks so very much indeed. That's Mark McHugh, owner of Glenbourne Farm Produce, a free egg producing farm under that housing order. Really successful, really, really busy business. And of course, it's a really, really serious issue. And we hope it doesn't visit any more of our, you know, bird producers or egg producers, what have you. But you also heard from Mark and his informed opinion, the chicken came before the egg. Now on the programme with me is Tom, who is a former member of the Rivers Trust Volunteer Project, officers too with the Mill River Conservation Group. Tom, sorry about that. A bit convoluted, but you know who you are. Right.
Aye.
Not happy. I'm not surprised. A bit of dumping going on. Not a bit, actually.
Yeah.
It always annoys me and frustrates me. Tell us where and what.
Well, it's in the Shown area. We're the Mill River Conservation Group. We're a voluntary group. I'm a project officer with the group, voluntary as well, and what we do is we kind of clean up the rubbish on the waters and the rivers, and we kind of like carry out nature-based kind of habitat projects, and we do kind of know community-led education, kind of bring awareness about pollution and stuff like that. So the Owenclue River, it's on Buncrana and runs down on the Buncrana, which is the Mull River, which is known locally as. So we kind of we kind of monitor that there, and it's a blue dot catchment, and what that means, Greg, is it's just high in water quality at the top area of the catchment. So my rant is, I apologise, but my own video for my rant was basically that the rubbish had been dumped on the upper area of the catchment, the blue dot area, which is kind of frustrating when there's so much going on with lower parts of rivers, pretty much in County Donegal, as it's reflected on the EPA's water quality report. And it happened last year as well. And it kind of annoys me as well, because the Tidy Towns works so hard, and Buncrana and the other groups as well, volunteers all around on Ashona as well, like, work so hard. And like, for the likes of herself, we've spent years giving her time, getting training, taking advantage of workshops, projects, going and paying for training herself, just to learn about the environment and how to do things right. So then you get that situation where people just come along after everybody's effort, and they unwantedly just, with no care about the environment, they just throw any kind of rubbish. The problem for us is that when those kind of things enter the river, it's the damage they do to the water quality, and then the damage they do to the life on the river, that's kind of the insect life that's supporting pretty much a lot everything else, you know, I mean, in terms of wildlife, in terms of even the insects are doing a job as well in terms of water quality. So when the water quality gets so bad and you lose some of those insects, you start to lose the ecosystem of the river's balance to kind of sustain, like, vitals, things like, you know, salmon, young salmon through the juvenile process, they become smolts, like, you know, from power and the smolts and to get to sea, and supporting like eels that grow on the rivers to go back to sea. There's just so much damage gets done, and it just, sometimes it would infuriate you when you're just kind of picking away and picking away. And like, as I say, our members and our group, like, we're given our own time, we're given our knowledge. Like, in our group, like, we have our volunteers, we have things, we have, like, zoologists, we've people with experience like flooding, with wildlife ecology, with environmental pollution. We try to bring all of those skills together and use them just, you know, to try and make things better. And the same with, as I say, our Tidy Towns, especially Buncrana. We've seen how well they've done and the fantastic job they do and what they brought home for the community. And then you get, as I say, you get a cohort people that's out there just wrecking in front of them.
And you know, it's not, I mean, annoying. You know, hopefully the penny's dropped in terms of the damage this can have to rivers and the ecosystem, but also then to expect people like you, Tom, or other volunteers to get your wellies or your waders on and to have to go in and drag their crap back up, you know, and put it into other bags and dispose it. And there was effort required in this. They had to load that stuff into their vehicle. They had to back it down towards the river and then chuck it a little bit up the river so it wasn't sitting just where the road meets the river. I mean, that's premeditated. That's effectively saying, right, I'm going to crap on my community here.
Well, like, for like in our example there, and as I say, like, I'm very conscious of, I wouldn't say anybody in particular, but as I say, you would have situations there where cleaning up rubbish and some of what we say known offenders, which I couldn't say, would actually be on the vicinity, actually pass you by, and they're on the way to that area, but you just happen to be inconveniently there, actually redding up something. So you get those kind of situations too. Now, I will say this here, like, you know, we have a fantastic litter warden, like, shout out to him, like, you know what I mean? He helps us out so much. He helps out all the other groups as well. Like, you know, we're doing our spring clean, and we're doing our clean coast cleanups, and we're doing, like, our bits and bobs, you know what I mean? They couldn't assist anymore. But I suppose with my video, what I was trying to get across as well is, one of the big problems as well is, I know myself, like, it can be absolutely infuriating. You come along, you see pile of rubbish dumped, and you just want to take it, and you just want to, you know, get rid of it there and then. But as well, if you come on, like, say, like, bags of rubbish, and the bag's intact, and they're dumped there, and they're closed, there's a good chance that there'll be information inside those bags that could identify it. But the problem is, if you start going under the bag yourself and start, you know, unpacking it and individually bagging it, there's a whole GDPR thing in. So then if you're, you know, one of the things I would say, if you come on bags that are dumped at the riverside and the bag's intact, just get on to your litter warden, who'll get on to the council's Department of Environment, or get on to the council yourself, the Department of Environment, and give them an exact location.
Right, so just in relation to that, that's quite interesting, Tom. So as a civilian, if you identify a letter, for example, within the bag, that can't be actioned upon then, because you've breached the litterer's GDPR.
Yeah, well, like, say, for example, like, if I had went up and I had photographed the contents of that bag and found details in that bag, shared those details around, even with other groups. So therefore, what would happen then is, say then the Department of Environment comes along, they decide, right, we're going to take action on this, and then you're going to find what's going to crop up as GDPR was breached in terms of these people's persons' rights and their privacy. Even though that sounds ridiculous, you know what I mean, when you think they've dumped the stuff in public. Different story if it's spread all over the place and it's lying in the river and you have to pick stuff up and there's something there and it goes under a bag. Still, you can alert, you know, your litter wardens and stuff that got there. But one of the best bits of advice I could give us, is to say, we're volunteers. So basically, we had to get the training. So through LawPro, the Local Authority Water Programme, Donegal County Council, and regional groups like Anishone Rivers Trust, other groups like ourselves, through the years since going back to 2019, have gone taking workshops and training and stuff like that. And then what we do is take that training and then use our own time, give our own time, volunteer, and put our own time into our own areas or local communities. Like, for example, the thing I done was originally back with the River Guardian programme. Mm. So that involved training and analysing river invertebrates to identify the health of the river stream. So that's what I was ranting on about the insects, because we would monitor insects there, and we love monitoring insects there when we're doing our insect count for that area of the river, because we get so many and it's great to see them. You know what I mean? So when you start seeing stuff like that there, the alarm bells goes off, because that kind of stuff that you see happening up there and higher parts of the catchment where spawning's going to happen, and there's a myriad of things that's happening in the upper parts of catchments that play such an important role to the middle parts of rivers and lower. So they start getting tampered with the same.
Doesn't it? Yeah. All right, listen, Tom, thanks so much. By the way, it's not a rant, because it's really important what you're doing, and we really appreciate you coming on and help us understand it. Unfortunately, time's caught up on me here. But it's something.
Can I just say before I go, like, as I say, massive shout out and well done to Buncanna Tidy Towns, and a big shout out to Wild Anishone, all the other groups, and a shout out to the Anishone Rivers Trust as well, we collaborate and we give our time to. We're all trying to achieve the same thing. So big shout out and massive respect to everybody who's doing that.
Well done, Tom, and well done to yourself. That's where we leave it on the show today. Back tomorrow morning at 9. By the way, lots of you messaging in, as you can imagine. We'll get to those tomorrow. But that's where we leave it, as I say.